I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Banking Weekly from the Financial Times with me, Patrick Jenkins. Joining me in the studio today are David Crowe, our banking editor, Stephen Morris, our European banking correspondent, and Nick McGaw, our retail banking correspondent. We're joined down the line from New York by Laura Noonan, our US banking editor, and our guest this week is the chief executive of Atom Bank in the UK, Mark Mullen. This week, we'll take a look at Deutsche Bank as it struggles to implement its vast restructuring plan, a catch-up with the challenger banking sector, including that interview with Atom Bank, and a look at Metro Bank's new plans. And finally, Citigroup as it comes under pressure to restructure. First, though, to Deutsche Bank. And Stephen, you've been monitoring the progress in various ways of the first few weeks of their restructuring plan, a pretty dramatic plan which involves cutting 18,000 jobs. And you broke the story the other day that one of the teething problems has been that they forgot to shut off the systems or email access for people who've been fired already. Tell us more.
Well, that's right. Deutsche Bank, one of the big questions it faces over this huge restructuring is whether it can execute it. This is the fifth new strategy in 7 years. So you can understand why certain observers like us or investors are somewhat skeptical. And pretty early on, they had a compliance blunder. For dozens, you know, as many 50 people, important people, traders who had been fired or told they were going to be let go and sent home, Deutsche Bank basically forgot to turn off their access to the bank's systems and their emails, which led to potential breaches of client data, potential collusion with former and current employees, and generally wasn't a good look for the bank, whose CEO has described it as being in relentless execution mode and promised that this new strategy will be done better than all of the previous ones. So whilst, you know, this can seem like a sort of an amusing Deutsche Bank blunder, there is kind of a serious underlying aspect to this. These traders still being able to email clients and talk to their colleagues from their work emails is really something that should have been thought of ahead of time. And one person we spoke to said basically Deutsche didn't have enough compliance and tech people involved in these redundancies to make sure that it all went smoothly.
Now, one other aspect of this restructuring is the creation of this capital release unit, as it's called, a kind of bad bank or a non-core bank, which they are putting more than 200 billion of assets into and planning to wind them down over time. We had an interview the other day with the co-head of that unit, who was talking, I think, about maybe more rapid progress than had been expected in beginning that wind down. What exactly is the target there?
Well, that's right. We scored an exclusive interview with Ashley Wilson, who's the co-head of this new bad bank. And he told us that they are going to start letting prospective buyers take a look at these equity derivatives and fixed income derivative assets that they're trying to get rid of to release some pressure on their balance sheet. This will start next month, and they're expecting to get bids in September, because really the time is critical for Deutsche now. They need to try and show investors what the bank of the future looks like. So they have a partnership in place with BNP, where they're trying to offload some of these derivatives contracts and staff as well. But you have to imagine some of the big US banks like Citi and JP Morgan, Bank of America, who don't have the same balance sheet constraints that a sort of struggling European bank does. We're very keen to get in there and cherry pick some of the better deals that Deutsche is looking to offload. Working for a non-core unit is always quite a strange experience, because the better you do your job, the faster you lose it. So that's why it's always interesting to talk to these people like Ashley Wilson and see how they're structuring the rundown.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep a close eye on it as the months go by. Thank you for that. Let's move on to our second story and a look at the UK's challenger banking sector. This is a part of the market that has been growing very rapidly in recent years. And one of the biggest, certainly most high-profile new entrants is Metro Bank. So, David, Metro Bank had a couple of interesting items of news the other day, some results, but also, perhaps slightly unexpectedly, news that the chairman, Vernon Hill, co-founder of the bank, is to depart, or at least to step down as chairman.
Yes, don't you tell him that he's going to depart, because he gets very angry indeed. He's not leaving. That's the message that comes loud and clear from him. He is, however, going to stand down eventually as chair of Metro Bank, and they're going to appoint an independent chair. But it was a messy sort of succession plan, the kind of which the city tends not to like. So Vernon making lots of noises about staying heavily involved. He's joining the board as a non-executive director, which is very unusual. And even then he says, and I'll be much more than your traditional Ned. Think of me as a founder, and making noises such as the independent chair will have skills that complement mine.
Yes, if they ever manage to find somebody who's prepared to work under that kind of system, I guess. And the results were kind of a mixed bag as well.
Well, the results certainly didn't impress investors. The shares declined quite sharply on the following day. The biggest fears, I think, are that there was quite a lot of deposit flight in the first half of the year, about £2 billion. Metro Bank got some of that back, quite a large chunk of it back, £700 million in a sort of 7 weeks preceding the announcement. But there's this overarching question mark now, because this bank was all about growth. And now the bank seems to be all about trying to preserve capital and be more stable. And then it becomes a much less interesting story for investors.
And this all obviously follows the scandal surrounding the misreporting of their capital needs, the misallocation of certain assets, which we've reported on a number of times in this podcast. I suppose the Metro story, as you say, is putting a positive spin on it, all about a bank growing up a little bit. And that's true, I suppose, across the board of challenger banks. And Nick, you were speaking recently to Mark Mullen of Atom Bank, another of these challengers, which is part owned by Spain's BBVA. We'll come on to hear your reflections on that and the broader sector in a second. But first, let's hear what Mr. Mullen had to say to you when you started by asking him, what does the future hold for the bank?
Priority number one is we've made a lot of progress. We've got to make damn sure that we don't stall. So ultimately, the business, any business, is built on customers. So you've got to look after customers. It doesn't matter what product or service you offer them. You've got to make sure that they're happy and satisfied and you're competing. But fundamentally, we want to broaden the number of products we're offering. So we'll introduce instant access deposit accounts later on in the year, and then we'll get into unsecured lending for businesses and for personal customers in 2019. And we're on a trajectory and a road that'll get us to current accounts either at the end of next year or into early 2021. So got a whole bunch of products that we want to expand. The reason we are doing it all next year and the year after is because we wanted to wait until we had a new technology platform to put them on.
And then Mr. Mullen was asked, what are the big challenges really for the challenger bank sector?
Big banks are not just giving up the fight and walking away. Yeah. So whilst they have lots of cost problems and they've got lots of complexity problems and remediation stuff that's still hanging over them, they've also got lots of money. And they've pretty much got the customers too. So they're not giving up the fight. Nobody should expect them to. They're very powerful organizations, and all the challenger banks have got to find their place in the world. And their place in the world has to be based upon them offering something distinctive and different from what Lloyds or RBS or HSBC or any of the bigger players can offer. That's never going to be easy. So at one level, you'd say, well, gee, you know, it's their technology. Well, a lot of their technology problems can be solved with money, or at least the appearances can be solved with money. I think in the end, one of the things that they are not and can never be is young again. And it really helps if you're building brands that new and young is something that comes your way only once. And some of those bigger brands are going to look like dad dancing at your wedding, and there's nothing they can do about it.
So, Nick, were you surprised by what you heard? Or are you fully expecting now to hear these kinds of honest appraisals of the difficulties that these banks are facing?
I think how honest the appraisals are from different banks will depend slightly on the characters of chief executives among some of their peers. But Atom's an interesting one because it was the first of the wave of digital banks to set up in the UK, but it's had maybe a kind of lower profile than the likes of Monzo more recently. Partly that's because it's taken a more traditional business model. It's all online and app-based and put a lot of focus on technology, but they don't have a current account at the moment. They're not doing daily interactions and trying to build up millions of users. It's more about offering kind of traditional fixed term savings accounts and lending for mortgages. So that means although their users will be much lower than the likes of Revolut or Monzo, their revenues so far have been a lot higher. That though does bring its own difficulties, and difficulties are a bit more similar to the sorts that people like Metrobank would face. So talking about the challenges, the big banks aren't giving up. They're not just rolling over, especially because of ring fencing rules that came in last year that forced people to separate their investment and retail banking operations. You have the likes of HSBC now have tens of billions in liquidity that they have to use somewhere in UK retail. And so they sink it into mortgages, which means it's been an absolutely brutal year for smaller players. Just this morning, shares in CYBG got hit because they had what most people thought was a fairly decent quarter, but there was a warning that their interest margins were going to be at the lower end of forecasts because it's such a competitive area. There's a slight reminder that if you're Metrobank, for example, even if you can address the issues around the chairman and governance and those sort of other various regulatory investigations and idiosyncratic issues, it is a tough market for small banks to compete. Some people have already pulled out of some areas. Mr. Mullen at Atom wasn't completely negative about this, as you would expect. He said their view is essentially they had to grit their teeth and ride out the particularly rough bit. And now the sense of things are looking a little brighter and they can sort of see the light and the path towards profitability, but it's going to be tough for everyone.
And of course, they've recently raised a new chunk of funding. And as I said, BBVA is an anchor investor for them, which I guess must be helpful.
Yeah, there's a sort of stability that comes, I think would be the way you'd describe it, from having, they've got three big investors, which is BBVA, Tosca Fund and Neil Woodford. Obviously, he's had some complications in the last couple of months, but he was still also involved in the fundraising recently. It means there's slightly less pressure to sort of bring in new people all the time and boost up your valuation. It also means that there's always speculation about what the end game is and whether BBVA may want to fully take over the whole thing and use it as a launchpad to have a UK banking business. They had an option to do that earlier in the year and they didn't take it. That's why we had the fundraising. This gives them enough capital to keep going for a bit longer, but they may be now looking towards doing an IPO instead.
As you say, tougher times though for all of these banks. So important to monitor their progress as things go forward. Thank you for that. Let's move on to our final topic of the day and a look at Citigroup. And we can go over now to Laura Noonan, our US banking editor in New York. We had a big piece in the FT this week looking at Citi as it comes under pressure to be bolder in its strategy, which I guess in some ways is a sign of how far we've come since the financial crisis, but it's not measuring up so well against its peers. Laura, is that what investors are concerned about most?
So this piece really began with the idea of looking at how Citi has fared since the financial crisis relative to its two biggest peers, JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America. And the starting point was that pre-crisis, JP Morgan was worth $133 billion, Citi was worth $83 billion, and Bank of America was worth $59 billion. Flash forward a decade, Bank of America and JP Morgan are both worth around $225 billion. Citi is worth less than $80 billion. So clearly somewhere along the way, the paths of these institutions diverged, and the idea was to uncover why. From talking to investors, analysts, executives at Citi, former Citi executives, we built up a picture of the underlying causes for this. And one of the recurrent themes was the idea that Citi had been focused on the quarterly targets and on meeting short-term targets at the expense of thinking about bigger, longer-term strategic targets, and that Citi was maybe suffering from a lack of ambition, or Citi was suffering from a lack of forward thinking, that it was all about what's going to happen in the next quarter and not enough about taking the kind of risks and taking the kind of gambles that you need to do to really create a bank that's going to be valuable in the future.
And where does Citi Chief Executive Mike Corbett fit into this?
Mike Corbett has been chief executive since 2012. He very much came in after the crisis, and his initial role was to steady the ship. And I think people would say he's done a very good job of that. I mean, Citi has missed some targets along the way, but I think they have been really trying to chip away at costs for the last 5-6 years. And I think people have appreciated that. But there are questions about whether Mike is going to be brave enough or bold enough, or whether it's within his chief executive's DNA to say, right, we're going to sacrifice short-term earnings because we're going to invest $20 billion in technology. Or there was talk a few years ago about the bank maybe doing something bolder around its Mexican operations. There was some people pushing for maybe disposing of that. Mike, we understand, wasn't very keen. Now, no one is suggesting we revisit that now, given where valuations are at in Mexico, but it's just an example of the kind of things people think that Citi could have done to achieve a kind of clearer and more streamlined business than the various portfolios of businesses it has now.
And finally, Laura, we had some more news, didn't we, from Citi about further cost cuts. How's that going to go down?
So yeah, earlier this week, we learned that Citi is cutting a few hundred jobs in its global markets and trading business, and also that it's doing some internal reorganization to streamline how it runs its equities business. In terms of the cuts, I mean, investors generally like these kind of cuts because Citi does need to keep tight control on costs. And if we look at the trading businesses generally, the trend is very much towards fewer people and more technology. So the hope would be that these cuts in headcount are also going to be matched or at least in some way compensated for by investments in technology. Then in terms of the streamlining operations, that's obviously probably positive. I mean, it's hard to really judge from the outside how different when you have these organizational changes and you have divisions which were formerly separated now formally together. It's difficult from the outside to see how significant that really is and how closely integrated they previously were in practice anyway. But I think that's just an example of Citi trying to kind of tidy up things and streamline things.
Well, that's all for this week. Thank you very much to David, Stephen and Nick here in the studio, to Laura in New York, and to our guest, Mark Mullen, Chief Executive of Atom Bank. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can keep up to date with all of the latest banking stories at ft.com/banking. We are now going to take a summer break for the whole of August, but we'll be back in early September with our next Banking Weekly podcast. In the meantime, do have a great summer. Banking Weekly was produced by Andrew Georgiadis. Until September, goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.